Hello, everyone, and a very happy Sunday evening, or Monday morning if you're in Australia. It's good to see you all, and we are here for the 7 Steps to Awakening. But before I begin, I'm just going to play a song, and the song that I am playing is called What the World Needs Now from Jackie DeShannon.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. But the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you want to know.
So tonight, with the 7 Steps to Awakening, we're going to begin with quote number 802, which is a Nisargadatta Maharaj quote from Step 4, and this is the quote. We are complex beings at war within and without. We contradict ourselves all the time, undoing the work of yesterday. No wonder we are stuck. A little of integrity would make a lot of difference. So I guess if Nisargadatta had been singing our opening song, it would have been, what the world needs now is integrity. Right. We are complex beings at war within and without. We contradict ourselves all the time, undoing the work of yesterday. No wonder we are stuck. A little of integrity would make a lot of difference. So let's see where my journal went with this when I contemplated this in October of 2015. The journal says, why be in conflict with one's self? But the word self is capitalized. Why be in conflict with oneself? That makes no sense. First, discover what your heart asks of you, if you do not already know, and then willingly comply with that. Your heart is yourself, again capitalized. To avoid or resist its bidding is to fight and struggle against yourself, capitalized, against your own heart, against your bliss. A long time ago, I had a spiritual teacher that asked something of me that did not feel right to me. What the spiritual teacher wanted me to do was whatever he said, without checking within myself to see if it felt right for me. And I checked within myself on that. And I chose at that time to end that relationship with that spiritual teacher. And although I've never felt that was a mistake, I've always felt that was the right choice to make. The decision that really kind of arose in me then was, you know, what if I'm wrong? You know, what if the way to wake up is just to do whatever he tells me to do without checking within, right? What if that's true? And I kind of came to this inner decision. Let me see if I can put the inner decision into words. The inner decision was, I would rather trust myself and be wrong than not trust myself and be wrong. In other words, I'd rather trust that intuitive feeling about what is right for me and later learn I made a mistake than ignore that intuitive feeling and later learn I made a mistake. Does that make sense to you guys? Am I saying that so that it's clicking in other people's heads? Yeah, okay, good. Good. I didn't, you know, I felt like going against myself was a very big mistake. And if I went against myself and it turned out to be, you know, absolutely wrong, there would be this, I knew I shouldn't have, you know. So my journey has always been a journey of following my own intuitive guidance. And of course, any of you all who listen to my teaching know that I encourage you to do the same. And that doesn't mean that we don't make mistakes along the way. Even sometimes determining what is my intuitive guidance and what is my thinking mind can be a little challenging, as I'm sure you've discovered. But it seems like there is something important about being authentic and that being authentic means following oneself. Now, with that said, I wonder how many times a day we don't follow ourselves. I think that sometimes we don't follow ourselves in even very, very simple matters. Like, I know in America, overeating is a challenge. You know, a lot of people overeat. And I think that many of us, if we were very, very honest with ourselves, we would know that we're out of harmony with our intuition when we're overeating or when we're eating the wrong foods, right? So even in very simple matters, I think that we are not in harmony with ourselves. So I guess what I'm saying is that I have a philosophy that I trust, that it's best to listen to my intuitive self and be in harmony with it. And then at the same time, I recognize I'm not 100% in harmony with my own intuitive self. And if I'm not 100% in harmony with my own intuitive self, then maybe, most likely, maybe definitely, I'm doing what Nisargadatta talks about in this particular quote, where I am contradicting myself all the time, undoing the work of yesterday. You know, if you imagine a dance, it's kind of like taking a step forward and then taking a step back again. And you could just do that all the time. Step forward, step back, and sure, you're dancing, but you're not going anywhere. So maybe the first thing that we each need to do is learn the difference between our ego self, our false self, our thinking mind, and our intuitive self. You know, first you got to know the difference. But then, what if we discipline ourselves enough? Because I think it does take discipline. What if we discipline ourselves enough to be in harmony with our intuitive self all of the time? What might that lead to? Being in harmony with our intuitive self instead of listening to our false self. Is it possible that it would at least lead to genuine happiness? Maybe better physical health even? And possibly awakening? Kathy says, yes, yes, and yes. Is it possible that by not being, I mean, really think about how silly this is, okay? Think about how silly is it not to be in harmony with our own self? What kind of contradictions are we creating, conflicts are we creating within our own self by not even being in harmony with ourselves? You know? And in fact, again, if we look at the journal entry, that's really what the journal entry says. It says, why be in conflict with one's self? Again, the word self is capitalized throughout this entire journal entry. Why be in conflict with one's self? That makes no sense. First, discover what your heart asks of you, if you don't already know, and then willingly comply with that. Your heart is yourself. To avoid or resist its bidding is to fight and struggle against yourself, against your own heart, against your bliss. And again, I'll read this Nisargadatta quote again. Quote number 802. We are complex beings at war within and without. We contradict ourselves all the time, undoing the work of yesterday. No wonder we are stuck. A little of integrity would make a lot of difference. And you know, one thing that's standing out to me right now is this first sentence. We are complex beings at war within and without. Oh, I'm noticing what Meg typed in the room. Inner sense equals innocence. Isn't that cute? Inner sense equals innocence. But back to this sentence, we are complex beings at war within and without. Nisargadatta isn't saying here that we have to be complex beings. Right, we can be simple. Simplex. Unified. You know, a unified being, one in harmony with itself, would be a simple being. A complex being is one that's not in harmony with itself, has all kinds of inner agitations and uncertainties and going on, right? Inner struggles. We are complex beings at war within and without. I want to say absolutely unnecessary. We don't need to be complex beings at war within and without. It's absolutely unnecessary. We are complex beings at war within and without. We contradict ourselves all the time, undoing the work of yesterday. No wonder we are stuck. A little of integrity would make a lot of difference. And I'm just going to leave that quote now and move on to the next quote, which is quote 803. Also a Nisargadatta Maharaj quote. This quote's a little longer. The desire to find the true self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else. But you must be honest with yourself and really want nothing else. If in the meantime you want many other things and are engaged in their pursuit, your main purpose may be delayed until you grow wiser and cease being torn between contradictory urges. Go within without swerving, without ever looking outward. That's a beautiful quote. I'll look at the journal entries in a moment, but I think the quote really, really speaks for itself. Let me just read it again because it's perfectly worded. I don't feel I have anything I could add to it. The desire to find the true self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else. But you must be honest with yourself and really want nothing else. If in the meantime you want many other things and are engaged in their pursuit, your main purpose may be delayed until you grow wiser and cease being torn between contradictory urges. Go within without swerving, without ever looking outward. I love that quote. All right, so let's see what happened when I contemplated this. Way back when, October 9th, 2015, this is 803A. What is this moment for? It is for being with my love in whatever way I know to be with it. There is a nagging voice that tells me I do not know how to be with my love well enough. And because I do not know how to be with my love well enough, I am missing it completely. But if I begin to turn my attention toward that voice, that is when I feel lost. When I stay with this innocent, precious moment, writing if I feel to write, looking outside at a bird or a rabbit or a plant if I feel to look, sitting quietly with the heart if I feel to just be, when I do any of these things, I do not feel lost. I feel presently in love. I cannot say at a mental level that I know anything about what is right or what is wrong. But I do know the feeling of bliss, the feeling of connection, the feeling of overwhelming presence in all things. This is my present moment joy. This is how I feel called to be with my love. So, confession. I do practice awareness, watching awareness, or maybe it's more honest to say I practice the loving consciousness method, or, because as I've said to you all before, I think that if I, when I sit down, I need to sit down in love. Otherwise, the meditation feels dry, and it also actually feels like a waste of time. I need to sit down and be in love. And so again, this is why I typically read something that is inspiring me to practice prior to practice. That way, when I close my eyes, I am motivated to close my eyes. And it's coming from love. And I suppose that there is no doubt that my meditation skills have improved over time. I think that's an absolute certainty. But I still don't feel like I am a great meditator. And so if I were to listen to my mind, my false self, I'm certain that it would probably tell me that I'm wasting my time and give it up. I can't do that. Isn't that funny? I can't do that. Why can't I do that? Because I am following my love. I mean, didn't I just talk to you a moment ago in quote 802 about being in harmony with yourself? When you're in harmony with yourself, at least in my experience, let me just speak for me. When I'm in harmony with myself, myself, that which I'm in harmony with, has never once scolded me and told me I wasn't being in harmony with myself right. That I wasn't doing it right. Only the false self has done that. In fact, what I'm going to call the silence of my true self seems to always be pleased when I'm giving it any attention at all. It never tells me I'm not good enough. It never tells me I'm not doing it good enough. It never tells me I'm failing. And there are a number of ways that I give attention to myself a number of ways. And I think the fact that there are a number of ways enables me to do it. And again, the ego right now, while I'm speaking to you, okay? While I am speaking to you, the ego is saying, you're not doing it right. You don't do it good enough. Like right this second. And so in order to speak to you and to tell you what I do, I have to not listen to that critical voice in the mind because it kind of wants me to hide what I do because it's not good enough. You guys know this voice, right? Doesn't this voice live in your head too? So just to share with you what my practice is like, I have to overcome the not good enough voice. And like I said, I've never once heard my true self say, no, 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 that's not good enough. Not once. It just seems to be happy with whatever attention I give it, in whatever way I give that attention. And I give that attention in a large number of ways. One is through the practice of, I'm going to call it the loving. Yes, Jamie, I know. But I'm teaching right now, so why don't you lay down? Jamie wants me to give attention to her. I've been gone all weekend. I was giving attention to Jasmine because it was her 21st birthday. And now I'm home and Jamie's like, it's my turn for attention. But instead I needed to come here and teach. And then after this, I have a board meeting. So I'll give her attention tomorrow. She wants a W-A-L-K. But as I was saying, I do practice the loving consciousness method of meditation. And I used to set a timer. I no longer set a timer unless I have to be somewhere, you know, that I will. But usually I start early enough that that's not a problem. And so I close my eyes. And I stay there until my eyes open. And they always seem to pop open at some point, almost like surprisingly. So right now that's what I'm doing. I don't even often look at the clock before I close the eyes, so I can't tell you how long the eyes were closed. But I close the eyes and I keep them closed. And I would just in the... Just in being honest, I would estimate that my eyes are typically closed for an hour to like an hour and 15 minutes. That seems to be what's natural for me right now. I was attempting to do 2 hours, but I was still finding that very, very difficult. So now it's more in the range of an hour to an hour and 15 minutes. What I can do sometimes when I have enough time, like on those days when I'm taking, you know, 2 days off from everything and just meditating, is I can meditate, you know, for around an hour to an hour and 15 minutes and then open my eyes and move around a bit, you know, maybe get some breakfast or take a shower or maybe read something, you know, and then go back and meditate again. You know, so I can have more than one meditation session when there's enough time. And of course, you know, the ego is screaming, it's not good enough. But because the meditation isn't a 12-hour-a-day meditation, and because I do feel that self-attention is important, I give self-attention in other ways all the time. And, you know, I've talked to you guys about this before. I play those games, what I call those games. Noticing the presence of something or someone else. Noticing the presence in me. Noticing there is no dividing line. That's this week's game that I've been playing. And also contemplating, I contemplate all the time that this body personality is going to die. And I contemplate that there is an eternal reality, and that's what I am. And I just sit quietly, walk quietly. Sometimes I'm staring at the TV, but not watching TV. With that contemplation in my mind, I feel like, I am holding the self in my heart nearly every hour that my eyes are open, meaning not asleep in bed. And yet the ego wants to tell me this is not good enough. The self has never once said that. And when I'm just being with the self, whether I'm looking out the window as I apparently was, you know, had been doing on this day because I wrote about that, you know, looking out the window, noticing nature, but again, not just noticing nature, contemplating the self, giving self attention, attention to presence, attention to consciousness as I look out the window. Or whether I'm playing some other game, or whether I'm contemplating death and contemplating that which is eternal, or whether I have my eyes closed in loving consciousness meditation, or whether I'm reading something inspirational that's pointing in this direction. When I'm doing that, I always feel peace, joy, love, and just right. Just right. Like everything's just right. I'm just right. The world is just right. The truth is just right. Just right. There's just right. No wrong. And I also feel that my contemplations are deepening, like there's something deepening. I can't quite tell you what it is, but I can feel it. Like maybe I can kind of tell you what it is. What's deepening is the realization that the body-mind personality, and it doesn't matter which one we're talking about. We can be talking about the Regina body-mind personality. We can be talking about the Jasmine body-mind personality or any other body-mind personality, right? The body-mind personality is temporary. It will never be eternal. It is going to end. In consciousness, awareness, that which is eternal has always only been itself. And I am that, not this. That seems to be deepening. So, again, the quote says, "The desire to find the true self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else. But you must be honest with yourself and really want nothing else. If in the meantime you want many other things and are engaged in their pursuit, your main purpose may be delayed until you grow wiser and cease being torn between contradictory urges. Go within without swerving, without ever looking outward." And I just want to tell you guys that even as I read that quote, the ego can be heard saying, "The way you're doing it is not right. You're not good enough." You know, this is how it speaks. Let's look at the journal entry. What is this moment for? It is for being with my love in whatever way I know to be with it. There is a nagging voice that tells me I do not know how to be with my love well enough. And because I do not know how to be with my love well enough, I am missing it completely. But if I begin to turn my attention toward that voice, that is when I feel lost. When I stay with this innocent, precious moment, writing if I feel to write, looking outside at a bird or a rabbit or a plant if I feel to look, sitting quietly with the heart if I feel to just be. When I do any of these things, I do not feel lost. I feel presently in love. I cannot say at a mental level that I know anything about what is right or what is wrong, but I do know the feeling of bliss, the feeling of connection, the feeling of overwhelming presence in all things. This is my present moment joy. This is how I feel called to be with my love. And I'm going to go on to 803B, but I always like to read the quote again. The quote's the most important part, not my journal. So I always like to read the quote again before I go to the next journal entry. So here's the quote. The desire to find the true self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else. But you must be honest with yourself and really want nothing else. If in the meantime you want many other things and are engaged in their pursuit, your main purpose may be delayed until you grow wiser and cease being torn between contradictory urges. Go within, without swerving, without ever looking outward. All right, so going back to my journal, 803B. Can I forget my desire for my love and think that I want other things? Yes. If I do not spend time in the embrace of my love, I do drift away for a time. I become distracted by other things. But this only tells me that the time I love the most, that time alone in full embrace, is exactly as worthwhile as it feels. How wonderful to know that alone time, time spent in embrace, is the perfect place for me to be. How wonderful to know that my heart's calling is correct. I think I've said before, if not here, in other places, that I do not get up in the morning and go to my practice because of some sense of have to. In fact, to be perfectly blunt, if the only thing guiding me to get up and go to my practice was a sense of have to, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it because it wouldn't feel like being in harmony with myself. If some outside voice was saying, you know, you need to go and you need to spend this time reading and spend this time contemplating and spend this time meditating, and there was nothing in me that wanted to do it, I wouldn't do it. Just like I wouldn't do anything else because some outside voice is telling me to. It has to be in my heart. This is my life, my death, my awakening. It has to come from me. It has to be in my heart. It can't be because somebody else is telling me to do it. Now, that doesn't mean I don't take instruction from somebody else, right? I have learned the awareness, watching, awareness and the loving consciousness method directly from the teachings of Michael Langford. So I take instruction from Michael Langford. But taking instruction from him is not the same as doing it because he wants me to. I do it because I want me to. So I get up in the morning and I go directly into this quiet time. Ooh. Instead of my little mouth pointer for some reason just got really, really big and then it went back to normal size again. I don't know what that was about. But, you know, I get up in the morning and I go directly to this quiet time and I spend, you know, hours there each morning because that's what I want to do. But there have been times when I didn't do it. There have been times when I was out of harmony with myself. Yeah, Mighty Mouse. When I was out of harmony with myself. And again, the times that, you know, in recent memory, which means, you know, over the last 10 years, you know, recent memory, whenever I didn't get up, and you know what, I only think I did this for a couple of years, and they were probably around 2013 and 2014, and maybe some of 2015. You know, during that period of time, there was times when I was not getting up and going directly to my practice. And the reason for that was awakening together busyness. And the mind told me I had to get this done, I had to get this done, and I had to get this done. And I listened to the mind, and I was out of harmony with myself, and I was going straight to work, you know, answering emails and writing policies and doing whatever else had to be done. And when I was doing that, when I was missing my morning time and going straight to work, tension started coming back into me, into the body, stress. Sometimes, you know, kind of snapping at people. And so what this journal entry is saying is because I had that period of time where I wasn't getting up every day and going directly to my practice, I saw the difference in myself. I saw what life looks and feels like if I go to my practice every day compared to what life looks and feels like if I don't. And it seems like, for lack of better words, everything is better when I do go to my practice, right? I'm joyful throughout the day. I also continue in ways to contemplate throughout the day. I'm able to just be with whatever is without asking it to be different. I'm actually able to live the Loving All Method, not as a practice, but as a natural state. I live the Loving All Method as a natural state if I spend the first few hours of every day in my spiritual practice. I lose the Loving All Method as a natural state if I skip my morning practice, especially if I let that become a habit. If I have to, I can skip it for a day. You know, like this weekend I was in a, although I wouldn't say I exactly skipped it. That would be a lie. I didn't do it in the traditional way. The last 2 days I was in a motel room with Ron, I didn't get up and do my reading and my meditation. But the reason I say I didn't exactly skip it is because I still did some reading, like in the car or when I had the opportunity, some reading and contemplating. And I was always doing the games, what I call the games. So it's not like I forgot about it for 2 days. But if, let's say tomorrow I don't get up, and the next day I don't get up, and the next day I don't get up, soon I would begin to drift away from that. I would begin to lose it. So what I learned was what I want to do more than anything else in the whole wide world, and I mean this literally. What I want to do more than anything else in the whole wide world is get up, go into reading, contemplation, meditation, and then writing. That's what I want to do more than anything in the whole wide world. And when I do it, everything's better. So I must be in harmony with myself, and that must be what I'm supposed to be doing. And how wonderful is it? How wonderful is it that what I want to do the most is what's best for me? Let's look at the journal entry again. Can I forget my desire for my love and think that I want other things? Yes, if I do not spend time in the embrace of my love, I do drift away for a time. I become distracted by other things. But this only tells me that the time I love the most, that time alone in full embrace, is exactly as worthwhile as it feels. How wonderful to know that alone time, time spent in embrace, is the perfect place for me to be. How wonderful to know that my heart's calling is correct. So I'm going to read the quote again, and then we will look at the last journal entry on this quote. The quote again is 803. The desire to find the true self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else. But you must be honest with yourself and really want nothing else. If in the meantime you want many other things and are engaged in their pursuit, your main purpose may be delayed until you grow wiser and cease being torn between contradictory urges. Go within without swerving, without ever looking outward. All right, so let's look at 803 in my journal, or 803C in my journal. How do I know if I want only my love or if I want something else too? The question that reveals the answer to the previous question is this: where is my attention? If I am lost in thought about other things, surely I want other things. But if upon noticing that, I choose to drop my interest in other things and return my attention to presence, I am training myself to want only that which I want most of all. If I am training myself, I am not confused about what I really want, and I am exercising honesty regarding what I see. So what you're seeing in this particular journal entry, you know, in 2015, I was not in the same place that I am today, in February of 2018. Just like when we get to, you know, November of 2020, I will not be where I was in February of 2018. There's a movement happening. And I can say that in October of 2015, although I was already practicing meditation, contemplation and meditation in the morning, and already practicing playing the games during the day, for lack of better words, I wasn't as good at it then as I am now. You know, movement has happened. Back then, when I was meditating in 2015, I believe I was struggling to get in half an hour. And now, like I said, when I naturally close my eyes and let them naturally open, it's closer to an hour, hour and 15 minutes. Hour 20 sometimes, you know, it's around that range, naturally and easily. So there's some improvement there, right? And I expect that improvement to continue as long as I continue to practice, right? And then also what was happening in 2015 was I was already playing these games, but I would go longer period, I would play them, and then I would go long periods of time and forget to play them. And now I am genuinely playing them all of the time when my mind is not occupied in a task in which it needs to be occupied in. Like before I came down here today, I was starting to do my taxes. Fill out, you know, I use the H&R Block online form, and I was starting to do my taxes. When I was doing my taxes, my head was in my taxes. I actually wasn't playing the games then. But earlier today, I was in Fort Collins out to breakfast with Jasmine and Ron, then just kind of sitting in the motel room, kind of chatting, and then driving. You know, the drive here was like, you know, a 3.5 hour drive. And during that time, I was contemplating the self. I was playing the games. Right? So those games that get played when I'm out in the day that are keeping me with my mind on contemplating the self, and this includes, by the way, the contemplation of death. That's an important part of it for me. That is happening much, much, much more consistently. It doesn't seem to have gaps of forgetfulness like it used to. So what was happening when I wrote this journal entry is I knew that there were still gaps. I knew that I would play the games but then forget for long periods of time. But when I noticed that I forgot, when I noticed that my mind was caught up in thinking about whatever my mind was caught up in thinking about, I went back to playing the games. I said, I'm training myself. And if I'm training myself to be in contemplation of the self all of the time, it must be because I want that. I mean, you know, my brother isn't training himself to be in contemplation of the self all the time. Ron isn't training himself. Jasmine isn't training herself to be in contemplation of the self all the time because they don't want that yet. They're thinking about whatever it is that they want, and that's perfectly natural. It's perfectly natural for us to think about what we want. But as something in us begins to wake up to the fact that I am not this body-mind personality, that I'm something else, and that this body-mind personality is going to die and there's not a damn thing I can do to stop it, right? Or anyone else. But this other that I am is perfectly, quietly eternal. And I want this shift to occur so I know myself as that instead of thinking that I'm this temporal entity or apparent entity. Really not an entity at all. When I wake up to the fact that that's what I want, then no matter what the body appears to be doing, as long as the mind, again, isn't fully occupied on a task, there's a contemplation that begins to happen. And if I'm not in that contemplation, there's a knowing I want to be in that contemplation. And so the training, the changing the habits of mind, the training to be in the contemplation all the time begins to happen. And it begins to happen because we want it to happen. Because we want to know our true self. We don't, there's no value in thinking I am a false self that's going to die. It has no value. So the journal entry says, how do I know if I want only my love or if I want something else too? The question that reveals the answer to the previous question is this: where is my attention? If I am lost in thought about other things, surely I want other things. But if upon noticing that, I choose to drop my interest in other things and return my attention to presence, I am training myself to want only that which I want most of all. If I am training myself, I am not confused about what I really want, and I am exercising honesty regarding what I see. So again, the quote that we've been looking at, quote number 803, "The desire to find the true self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else." And right there, if you let it happen, is where the ego jumps in and starts telling you what a louse you are. Because you do want other things, right? It's not a very nice voice. So I'm trying to not be a nice voice right now. You do want other things, you guilty son of a, you know what? You faker, you don't want this, right? That's the ego voice. And as soon as we hear things like, "The desire to find the self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else," if we allow it in, that voice comes in. But maybe we're just still training ourselves. And we're training ourselves because we do want this. We're in a transition. "The desire to find the self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else. But you must be honest with yourself and really want nothing else. If in the meantime you want many other things and are engaged in their pursuit," listen to this, "your main purpose may be delayed until you grow wiser." And sometimes that's what happens for some of us. You know, we don't want it wholly. We think we want this or we want that. And more of our attention goes to this or that. And if that's what's happening, then that's what's happening. And we'll eventually grow wiser. We'll eventually learn that more money wasn't the answer. A bigger house wasn't the answer. Another mate wasn't the answer. And then we'll start wanting it. And then we'll start training ourselves to contemplate it all of the time. "The desire to find the true self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else. But you must be honest with yourself, you son of a bee." Don't listen to that voice. You son of a bee, you aren't honest. You're a faker. Don't ever listen to that voice. I've never heard the self speak to me in that way. "The desire to find the true self will be surely fulfilled, provided you want nothing else. But you must be honest with yourself and really want nothing else. If, in the meantime, you want many other things and are engaged in their pursuit, your main purpose may be delayed until you grow wiser and cease being torn between contradictory urges. Go within without swerving, without ever looking outward." My time is up. I gotta go. Bye.